I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
The Chris Ann Hall Show.
Any varmint that crosses that lady's path has met its match.
Come on!
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Show. Chris Ann Hall here, K-R-I-S-A-N-N-E. So glad to be here, honored to be here. Privileged to be able to bring you liberty over security, principle over party, truth over your favorite personality. A truth that is not fair and balanced, and yet still the truth. Interesting how that works, isn't it? I have a special show for you today. We're going to be talking about the court system again. But we're also, in the second half of the show, going to have an interview that I did with a man from Czechoslovakia. He was speaking at an event that I spoke to this weekend in just outside of Chicago, Illinois. And he has such a valuable perspective, such an inspiring man, and I can't wait to share this with you. But first, we're going to talk about the Supreme Court. You know how crazy they've gotten. But the Washington Post has written an article about a new book that is being published by Justice Stephen G. Breyer on how the Supreme Court should be understanding, learning, and applying foreign law in their decisions. No, I'm not kidding. I'm not exaggerating, and this book is not a book of hyperbole or sarcasm or even satire. No, Justice Breyer has written a book in which he is heart attack serious about the fact that our courts should be learning, understanding, and using foreign law in their decisions. Not just in cases where foreign law matters, like foreign contracts and those types of things. No. All the time. He says that the court, in his book, the book is called The Court and the World, American Law and the New Global Realities. He says their fears, those people who don't want to use foreign laws, don't much resonate when one understands the way in which foreign law and practices are actually considered. He says it's not the cosmopolitanism of some jurists that seek this kind of engagement, but the nature of the world itself that demands it. With the title of a book called The Court and the World, American Law and New Global Realities, I'm sure you can just guess where this is going. I am reading this article, and I just cannot believe what is being said. So many warnings over history. So many warnings from our framers. And here we go, walking down the wrong road again and repeating the bad history all over again. Justice Ginsburg said, quote, "Why shouldn't we look to the wisdom of a judge from abroad with at least as much ease as we would read a law review article from a professor?" Are you kidding me? I mean, this is reality now. This is the next step for our Supreme Court, the globalization of Supreme Court opinions. We better learn quick, fast, and in a hurry that these people don't make law, that they simply issue opinions. Breyer, the author of this book, is proud of being termed as the court's internationalist. He says, "I tend to have that kind of attitude more than some." And he's happy about that. The real question is this. How much will this book, how much, you know, I think the real question is, how much is he already influenced by foreign law? He, realizing how much research and effort goes into writing a book. I know I've written five, and it's not something that you just simply sit down and whip out, especially on technical issues like law. And he's written an entire book called The Court and the World, American Law and the New Global Realities. I want to know how much he's already influenced by foreign law. Because I'm going to have to add him to the list of people that need to be impeached. He actually believes that foreign law is the proper way in our new global reality to address American constitutional issues. This is bad. This is so bad in so many ways. At what point does it stop? At what point does, at what law do we accept and what law we don't we accept? Because you realize there's a foreign law out there on every single subject from every single perspective. So it's wrong to murder your daughter because she's sterile and her husband wants to divorce her because she can't have children in America, but it's not wrong by Sharia law. Do we now use Sharia law to judge whether someone has committed murder or not? I mean, is that the new cosmopolitan way to deal with legal issues, is run to the foreign courts for their decisions? What if we went to the Nuremberg, or to the courts of the Stasis? We could find all kinds of great law on how to oppress people and take their lives and their liberties. I'm sure we could find great law backed by that government. At what point does foreign law devalue, right? Is it 100 years old or 200 years old? Justice Ginsburg is the one who sat before Europe and said that the American Constitution is not something that we should be following and modeling. We should look to South Africa or something like that. Really? Because the last time I checked, South Africa's doing really well, right? Sarcasm. You have to go to law school to get this stupid. I just simply don't understand it. I guess it really shouldn't surprise us. I don't know how many people know this, but Alina Kagan was dean of Harvard Law. Yeah, Justice Alina Kagan was dean of Harvard Law. And while she was dean at Harvard Law, she removed constitutional law from the graduation requirement and replaced it with international law and comparative law. Both of these deal with foreign law as a relative source in making legal decisions. I don't, you know, we need to get back to teaching some real history. George Washington, in his farewell address, went to great lengths to explain to us the dangers of foreign influence. I mean, he said in his thing, in his farewell address, he says, against the insidious wiles of foreign influence, I conjure you to believe me, fellow citizens. The jealousy of a free people ought to be constantly awake, since history and experience prove that foreign influence is one of the most baneful foes of a republican government. You know, they were so firm about no foreign influence that even many of them, Jefferson and Washington to be sure, were not even in favor of having allies. Washington says that, but that jealousy to be useful must be impartial. He says, else it becomes the instrument of the very influence to be avoided. Instead of a defense against it, excessive partiality for one foreign nation and excessive dislike of another cause, those whom they actuate to see danger only on one side, and serve to veil and even second the arts of influence of the other. See, we will choose one side over the other, and the fact that we've chosen one side over the other will actually blind us to the reality of the argument. We can't be impartial in foreign affairs if we're picking sides. He says, real patriots who may resist the intrigues of the favorite are liable to become suspected and odious, while its tools and dupes usurp the applause and confidence of the people to surrender their interests. Do you catch that? Real patriots who resist foreign influence are liable to become suspected and odious. They will be called hate mongers and bigots and racists, and they'll be called intolerant, and they'll be called domestic terrorists, while everybody else is being duped by these foreign influences and having their liberty stolen because they're applauding the wrong influence. You see, why do we have to stop following the Constitution and stand on foreign law? Why? I mean, here's the crazy thing. I might even be a little bit more lenient with this whole foreign law thing. I doubt it, but, you know, just giving them the benefit of the doubt. I might actually be a little bit more lenient about foreign law thing if we actually followed our law. If the Supreme Court justices had a reputation of guarding and protecting the Constitution and following the Constitution and their opinions, I might be able to, you know, give them a little benefit of the doubt. But they're constantly using our own precedent in ways to circumvent the Constitution and legislate from the bench. Do you realize the pattern that this creates? If they start pulling foreign law in, they will literally have the authority to make any opinion they want by simply picking and choosing from the plethora of decisions out there in this global legal society. Against the insidious wiles of foreign influence, I conjure you to believe me, fellow citizens, that the jealousy of a free people ought to be constantly awake, since history and experience prove that foreign influence is one of the most baneful foes of Republican government. Not only that, it was not only the baneful foe of Republican government, it was even a baneful foe of their constitutional monarchy. It was the mechanism by which William I and his son William II brought Norman law and littered the Anglo-Saxon common law with the perversions of Norman law. And then after that, every king kept doing it, and revolutions and kings getting their heads chopped off. That's how we dealt with foreign influence. As a matter of fact, in 1641... the Grand Remonstrance of 1641, where Charles I loses his head for being charged with treason. One of the charges of treason was foreign influence, making deals with foreign governments contrary to the laws of the land. And then you have the English Bill of Rights of 1689, where all people in government, including the king and the queen, had to take an oath of office that they would never honor or even allow foreign influence in the decision-making of the kingdom. And so I guess maybe our attention span is, what, we're 400 years? Less than 300 years? Less than 300 years. Because we started down this road long before 1989. But here we are. Now, a Supreme Court Justice of the United States, with the bold audacity to publish a book while he's on the bench on how we should be following foreign law. Thomas Jefferson said in a letter to Thomas Lomax Monticello in 1799, "I sincerely join you in abjuring all political connection with every foreign power." Foreign influence is so destructive to liberty. I mean, seriously, if foreign influence was so great, why is everybody fleeing those foreign countries to come here? They hate the government so much and how the government operates so much that they have to flee like refugees to come to our country. And then when they get here, we've got our stupid, stinking Supreme Court trying to apply their law on us. How does that make any sense at all? Can we please, please learn? Can we stop this insanity before it completely and totally destroys us? You know, I realize Jefferson said that men are disposed to suffer evil while evil is sufferable, but can I just pray that we don't have to get that bad before we get better? Can I just pray for a grand awakening in the people, that we will finally listen to history, that we will finally listen to those who have lived through tyranny, through socialism, through globalism, and learn from their mistakes? Can we please do that? That's why I'm so proud to bring you, in this next section, the interview that I have with Vladimir from Czechoslovakia. Now, this interview is taken at an event. So we're outside, we're using my cell phone to record the interview. So the recording is not like you're hearing right now with me. So I will ask you to listen very closely. And I hope that the fact that you will have to listen closely will maybe make this information that Vladimir wants to tell us sink in. Now, his English is not the best, but he has the best message for us, especially in consideration with this foreign law, foreign influence drive. A Supreme Court justice telling us now that we need to follow foreign law. He needs to be impeached. He is no longer fit to sit on the bench. We should have followed the English Bill of Rights and made our politicians take an oath that they would not take any foreign influence. But you know what? They took an oath to support the Constitution, and how's that one working out for us? Coming up with our interview with Vladimir when we come back.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Okay, I'm going to jump straight into this interview because it will take up the majority of this section. And I want to remind you that the recording is not like what you're hearing now. You're going to hear a distinct difference in the quality of the recording, but it's not the recording that's important. It's the message. Thank you so much for your attention in this.
I'm at the Liberty Fest here in Illinois, and my special guest is Vladimir Sliva. Tell us where you came from. Where were you born?
I was born in Czechoslovakia, now it's Czech Republic. And it was right after Stalinist era. which was the worst socialist time there. And then I was born in Brno, which is like capital of the eastern part of Czech Republic. And then my parents and I moved to Prague, which is the capital of the Czech Republic, when I was about five. And then I became kind of born again Christian, even though I was a cradle Catholic. And that was when I was at the university. I became involved in underground activities of our church.
Why did you have to have underground church?
Well, it was, you know, I am a Catholic, right? So Catholic, you could go to Catholic mass in many places. So that was basically not underground now. But when you talk about various activities, like being prepared for like the First Communion or marriage, mm-hmm. Or, you know, any kind of catechism, that was basically illegal on, you know, on my age group for sure. Mm-hmm. And so that's where you cross the line, basically. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, if you get together with young people and you pray and sing Christian songs and things of that nature, that's basically illegal, because that prohibits government to govern and monitor religion. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Right,
and
right.
There were laws against that.
What year was this?
Early 1980s, basically.
Okay, and when did you come to America?
We left the country, spent 8 months in a refugee camp in Europe, and came to America in 1983 with my wife.
And what did you think when you got here?
Well, I was amazed.
Yeah?
Yeah, you know, Reagan, and, mm-hmm. you know, he was saying the right things, mm-hmm. you know, about communism. And that was something really cool. Right?
Right.
And, you know, of course, we were amazed that the country is being kind of ruled using common sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, something I didn't grow up with. And, yeah, even though that had been a history, you know, mm-hmm. in Czechoslovakia, we had a good country before communism, prosperous country till 1948 coup. But anyway, again, that was before I was born. So, you know, America was very surprising and, you know, very positive. So I lived for like a quarter of a century just, you know, studying, working, not having much time, you know, having 8 kids, not having much time to monitor what's going on.
And so what have you seen happening to America today?
Well, since like 2008, I've been, I could not just not hear what sounded like socialism coming here, mm-hmm. basically, if I say it very succinctly.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was very, I don't want to say frightening, but, you know, unexpected, because, you know, Soviet Union and all these satellites, they dropped the communism, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I did get alarmed, and I tried to become a little active a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for example, I created a video which documents what I was observing and comparing, you know, the leftist tendencies here in the U.S. and what I experienced in Czechoslovakia. And I put it on YouTube video just before 2012 elections. Basically, since then, I've been pretty active trying to tell people, don't do this.
Right.
You know, especially what really makes me kind of, I don't want to use the word angry, but, you know.
Oh, you can be angry. That's
yeah.
Fine. I'm angry, too.
What makes me kind of, well, let's say active, you know, mm-hmm. is when I see people who claim to be Christians, and they may even go to church every week, they vote for this evil, right, mm-hmm. and for what ended up to be a persecution of Christians, not only in this country, but also our executive branch doing in other countries. I did foresee that happening, so it's very frustrating that, you know, I'm not eloquent enough to communicate that to people.
How did you foresee it coming?
You know, I'm holding this book, Takedown by Paul Kengor. It also has a subtitle, From Communists to Progressives, How the Left Has Sabotaged Family and Marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And basically that's where it starts, you know, the communists, when they take over, they attack religion and family every time. You know, they may be more flexible in how fast they get your possessions. But, you know, this one is kind of common denominator, which you see in all these socialist countries when they were losing their freedom.
So would it be safe to say that you are simply recognizing in America the very things you fled from in Czechoslovakia?
Right.
So what you say you're very active now. Tell us what you do to be active.
Well, I try to create those videos for YouTube. From the other things I do, well, there is a lot of passive things, like we don't watch TV at home, and mm-hmm. our children don't either, because we just don't have TV. And we do watch videos, but, you know, mm-hmm. the ones we select carefully, but not, we don't have TV channels at home.
Right, we don't either.
So that's kind of passive thing.
Right.
But, well, there are some outwardly, you know, like we go on overpass.
Uh-huh.
We try to inform people in the few words we can, mm-hmm. you know.
So you hold signs on the overpasses?
Basically,
yeah,
yes.
That's awesome.
And as I said, my wife prepares pretty often. She has been speaking in those school board meetings. And she even ran for office. Amazingly, she got 3,435 votes, which I mentioned here.
Yeah.
That was pretty nice. It wasn't enough this time to get that unpaid office, but people noticed. You know,
right,
so
right. She ran again then.
Right, and she, you know, she participated in all the public debates mm-hmm. and gave all the interviews. And
well, that is great.
Yes.
So, tell me, what is the most concerning thing to you right now in America? If there was one thing that just makes you feel very passionate and makes your blood pressure rise, what would that be?
As I said, I'm a Catholic, and what really stirred me to get me active in the first place was the HHS mandate and things of that nature. So I am really passionate about not wanting to pay taxes for killing of the babies here, because I feel responsible, you know, if I pay for it, then it's my problem. You know, it's basically, I'm being forced to support it.
Right.
And that's really what bothers me the most. But again, you know, there are so many things like you have, which are springing up, like the Common Core my wife was mm-hmm. fighting against when she was trying to get on the school board. You know, even how they attack our military, they retire or fire the generals. They want to standardize police force, so to speak, federally, you know. That's absolutely unacceptable. And I know exactly what they are doing and where it's going.
That's right.
I've lived in your future, basically, unfortunately.
Wow, that is the scariest thing anybody has said to me. That is horrible. I'm trying to hold back the tears just comprehending that you've lived our future.
Right. So,
but you're fighting now to make sure that future doesn't come to fruition.
Or if it does, then it's not my, there is zero cooperation on my part, and there is the maximum resistance on my part.
Right, right.
Because, you know, my children will have to live some people may think I'm exaggerating, but the way I view it is, you know, I came to free country, and now they were born here, and I owe it to them to preserve that freedom. And, you know, when I still lived in Czechoslovakia, I was thinking, you know, two my grandfathers did not live, you know, they died before I was born. I was thinking about that generation, even though there was a coup in 1948, and, you know, it was definitely not easy way to avoid what happened. I always was thinking, well, how come they had such a great country, free, you know, Czechoslovakia, and prosperous? And why would I be born into this mess?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
it's not right.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So what did they mess up, you know,
mm-hmm.
and is it their fault, you know?
Right.
What could they have done better, you know? And now I find myself in the same frustrating situation. I even know where it's going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that just doesn't, I cannot sit at home and do absolutely, you know, like, or if I sit, I better be fighting still, you know,
right.
whatever I'm doing. That's where I feel the responsibility.
Well, thank you so much for your time, and your words are very inspiring. Your activity is very inspiring, so don't quit, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. God bless you. We'll
yeah.
be praying for you.
Thank you for what you are doing.
Oh, thank you.
I wish I had your eloquence
oh.
to say whatever I'm saying.
Well, but you have a lot of power in what you say, and so I think it's more eloquent than you give yourself credit for.
Well, I do my best, so pray for me.
I will pray for you. God bless.
You.
Did you hear the passion with which he wanted to defend the liberty of his newfound country? Did you hear the motivation? I lived this. You know, one of the most powerful segments in this interview is him describing growing up in Czechoslovakia, hearing the stories from his family about what a great place Czechoslovakia used to be before the coup. Something he never experienced. He only got to experience the bad part of Czechoslovakia. And then he comes to America in awe with the common sense, the candor, and the liberty that we have, only to watch it degrade right before his eyes. And he thinks then about his children, remembering his experience. My children are now growing up in this. How will they look back on me? I looked back on my parents and thinking, why did I deserve to live in this? Why couldn't I live in the good Czechoslovakia? What could you have done to prevent this from happening to me so I didn't have to live in this place, persecuted in religion and beliefs in my own country? And then he says, I can't do that to my children. I can't let them grow up wondering and blaming me. And I can't vote for this stuff and be held responsible. I can't have this on my conscience. America, this is our wake-up call. This is our wake-up call. It's our legacy at stake. It's our future, our children's liberty at stake. Don't censor my voice. Hate me if you won't, or love me if you can. If the truth is what you want, then you found your man. I ain't backing down, I ain't backing up. If you think like I think, then crack it on up. I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my skin till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above.
Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
So what will it be, America? Will our children look back on us the way Vladimir looked back on his family? Talking about the time when the transition came. Talking about the days before the government took our rights, surveilled us at every extent of our lives, controlled, ruled, and regulated over us. How long do you think before that reality of religious persecution becomes an American reality? Oh, no, no, no. They had their religious liberty. Remember? Oh, we could be Catholic. We could go to church. You just couldn't do this aspect of the church in public. And you could go to jail if you did this aspect of the church. See, they didn't remove their ability to go to church. They just simply regulated it. How long before our beliefs are regulated like that? And will we sit idly by? I mean, isn't that the really big question? Are we just going to sit by and watch this happen? And then the only stories we have to tell of our children is how it used to be. And then we sit back and wait for them to do something about it. Well, you know, Vladimir and his family had an advantage, though, right? They just simply left Czechoslovakia and came to America. But what happens when America goes the way of Czechoslovakia? Where are you going to run to? Where are you going to flee? Where are you going to find your refugee status in your pursuit for liberty? This is the last stand, America. This is it. We are the last bastion of hope. I'll tell you what. We learned one thing from Vladimir's testimony is that this. There are people around the globe You want to talk about globalism? I'll tell you globalism. There are people around the globe holding their breath right now and praying that America does not fall under socialism, under Marxism, under communism, whatever ism you want to call it. There are people all over this globe praying that we will do something about this. They're counting on us. As Christians are being slaughtered across this globe, as Christians are having candlelight secret services in basements and abandoned buildings for fear of being caught and executed, they're praying that we don't let liberty die here. Because if it dies here, where will their hope come from? Where will they look for the light of liberty? You know, the only thing that I have as consolation is this, that I know that liberty is a gift from God. And that light of liberty burns within our souls. And persecution doesn't extinguish that light. It adds fuel to it and makes it burn brighter. We will have to fight for this at some point. But as Winston Churchill said, if you will not fight for the right when you can easily win without bloodshed, if you will not fight when the victory is sure and not too costly, you may have to fight with all the odds against you and only a precarious chance of survival. But he says there may even be a worse case. You may have to fight when there is no hope, because it's better to perish than to live as a slave. I know history, and I know that you and I, those of us over the age of 40, will never see that final consequence. But as Vladimir experienced in Czechoslovakia, we will condemn our children to buy back a gift that was supposed to be given to them by us. And they won't do it at the ballot box. They will do it with their blood. 'Cause guess what? There's no other liberty to run to. It's time that we take a stand now and be generous parents and fight for our children. God bless. See you tomorrow.